The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Jill Redding. I played Dolores on The Wire, and you're listening to the PVD cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 287. I hope all is well with you, and thank you for checking out this episode. And this episode is going to feature my conversation with a gentleman who has been a pro wrestling referee, a pro wrestling ring announcer. He is one of the driving forces behind the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast. He is Maryland's own Mike Dells. I met Mike a few months ago when I was guesting on another podcast, and we got to talking off air about our experiences being in independent wrestling. And so I reached out to Mike. He wanted to come on and chat, and actually it was very timely because when we recorded this episode, the WWE had just released a ton of talent, Braun Strowman, Ruby Riott, Aleister Black, etc., etc. And so the first few minutes of our conversation just revolves around those releases and what it might mean for the WWE and whatnot. But we do get into Mike's podcasting career, his refereeing, his ring announcing, and some other things that he's involved with. He's actually in barbershop singing, which is like barbershop quartets. And he's also done a little bit of acting. So he's got a lot of things to talk about, and we're going to cover them all. But before we do that, I need to thank a great sponsor of the PVD cast. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of everything you need for your comic book geekdom. They've got single issues. They've got graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, thousands upon thousands of back issues, a great pull system. So if you need a comic book store to call your very own, the place where you can go and where you can get great service and where you can find what you're looking for, then you look no further than right here in Westerville, Ohio, World's Greatest Comics. Now, I know some of you might say, I'm not in the Central Ohio area, John. Well, you can still check out the store and you can still interact with the folks at the store. They have a great Facebook presence. At WG Comics is where you can find them on Facebook, and they even have a great website, wgcomics.com. Please do me a favor. If you interact or you communicate with anybody from the store, please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD cast. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Mike Dells. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is a man that has been a wrestling referee, a ring announcer. He is one of the crew members behind the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast. Joining me, Mr. Mike Dells. Mike, how you doing this evening?
Doing good, brother. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It's been a busy day for those of us that like to cover the sport of professional wrestling with a lot of releases from the WWE. You know, before we jump into talking about your podcast and your career in wrestling and whatnot,
sure.
What do you make of this? What do you make of the WWE cutting all these people?
Well, I tell you, there's rumors and innuendos all around. Normally, shortly after WrestleMania, every year for the past 37 years, you know, they've done their version of spring cleaning, I guess you could say, WWE has, and they've kind of gotten rid of people, but also brought other people up. It's kind of a, you know, little changing of the guard kind of thing. But in this case, I mean, they've been cutting people left and right every other day. And I mean, this isn't just, you know, second or third roster people. These are major names, you know, that are going. And it seems like they're trying to free up a whole lot of cash, and it's trying to free up a whole lot of future. So could go a couple different ways. They're restructuring the company. They could be selling the company to NBC. They just got, you know, they just did that huge deal with Peacock for the next 10 years. So, I mean, Vince and Stephanie and the family can still run it, but if you got another big company behind it, it frees up a lot of capital. So, either way, there's just a ton of content and still a ton of people in the WWE on a lot of different levels, all the way from Performance Center, NXT, NXT UK, 205 Live, Main Event, Superstars, all the way up to Raw, SmackDown. There's a whole lot of content. But what I make of it, it's an interesting time to be a wrestling fan, but it's also, there's just a whole lot of stuff out there to watch. And even if the WWE isn't killing it right now, AEW is. And Impact Wrestling is, and New Japan is. I mean, they're killing it in different ways. So what I make of it, it's kind of sparking my late 90s, early 2000 attitude era, like WCW, WWE, watching them on two different televisions and things like that. It's just, you know, it's an interesting time to be a wrestling fan.
Were you surprised by any of the cuts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first one, obviously, like the day or two after WrestleMania, Samoa Joe.
Right.
It's huge. I mean, he's a main event superstar, and he's been behind the desk for the past year. You know, different things with injury, this and that, the pandemic, whatever the case may be. But he was at WrestleMania, you know, he was at, you know, during the rain delay and everything, and he was keeping everybody on track. And then a couple days after that, boom, gone. I'm like, Samoa Joe? Really? Was that necessary? I mean, what's going on here? And then, of course, Braun Strowman. That was the one today, probably your phone blowing up just like mine. He was just the WWE champion within the past year. He was helping keep this thing going through the pandemic. Live events are starting up within a month or two, and he is an attraction. He is a big attraction, and he is entertaining, and he is good in the ring, and he's got all the gifts. Why? I mean, they just literally extended his contract before the pandemic started all the way through 2023 to guarantee that he wouldn't do anything else. And now, boom, gone. So they're kind of making moves that just don't seem to make sense right now. I mean, I guess in the next month or two, when they go back out on the road, and if they do start a new ownership deal, it's going to make sense. But like I said, it's an interesting time. But I mean, just like when your phone was blowing up, and I'm seeing it on the internet, like, what is that? Aleister Black, they were just doing new video promos for him for the past 4 weeks. He's coming out reading a book, and it's all cryptic, and it's setting up for this big Undertaker like return or whatever. And just out of nowhere, he's gone. So what does the WWE do? What they have bird in hand, but it's the same bird in hand we've been watching for mm-hmm. a while. Mm-hmm. What do they do? I mean, how do they shake it up? Obviously, and if I'm going off on the tangents here, please cut me off. But like John Cena, you know, rumored to come back. Becky Lynch, rumored to come back. Brock Lesnar, rumored to come. Like all of these people that are these big money, big name superstars, as they get back out on the road and as they get back out with, you know, fans in front of them, they're going to have to do something different to fill these arenas up. We're still in a pandemic, technically. You know, you got to go through waivers. You got to go through this and that. Some arenas have limited capacity. Some states and arenas have their own rules. Some don't. WWE has their own rules. To be a fan, you're going to have to be a little dedicated. I went to WrestleMania, and, you know, you had to be dedicated. You had to sign a waiver. You had to present the waiver in mobile form. You had to wear a mask. You had to be distant, all this other stuff. And I did it. I was fine with it. But, I mean, you got to be a serious fan to get out there. But they're going to have to do something to shake it up. And then they're going to have to translate it to television, because everybody else watching on USA, and especially Fox, that's a big money deal, going to have to give them something to watch.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting circumstance that has happened over not only just today, but yep. as you mentioned, even after WrestleMania, there were a lot of cuts. It's very puzzling what they're doing when you're tossing around as much money as they have tossed around to Peacock and NBC mm-hmm. and whatnot. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the long run. And I guess we just have to wait and see what happens. It is very interesting to think about where some of these released talents could go in time. You know, I don't want to get off on a tangent, because that's a whole other podcast where we could spend hours talking about where this person could go or that person could go.
Non-compete clauses and how long and what are the yeah, all kinds of things. Yeah. But I'm willing to talk to you again, by the way. So.
Okay, you got it. But let's talk about you, though, Mike. That's what we're here for. Let's talk about the Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast. Why was it created?
It was created because two friends who worked together just talked about wrestling all the time. And after a year of that, we were like, you know, man, we should record this. Maybe somebody will listen to it. Maybe somebody will get something out of it. And then we figured out how to do it. The little Zoom recorder, pre-Zoom, it was a tiny little recorder that had two buttons on it and you could put a AA battery in it. We just put that down and we just started talking. And this was a little over 5 years ago now. And a couple people latched on, then a couple more people latched on. And we were like, let's continue to do this. Then we started building it. And then we started getting guests. And me being in the world of independent wrestling, I started using it as a vehicle to drive storylines. And then Big Ugly, you know, Eric Murphy, my partner, he also had a lot of ties into the video editing world and sports management and just a lot of different people that we've had on the podcast. And I've been in different things as well, as far as, you know, being a actor or a barbershop singer or something like that. So we all incorporating our worlds, our friends, and people just latched on. And I'm glad that they did. And we're still doing it 5 years later because we're still enjoying it. As we say, we're not right, we're not wrong, we're just fans. And that's true. And we're fans of professional wrestling. We're fans of life in general. We go off on tangents. We talk about everything. We talk about, you know, whatever it is that just comes up, whether it be sports or entertainment or the pandemic or, you know, WrestleMania, or we go through, you know, what's going on in the world of professional wrestling, of course. And we just have a good time, man. And everybody seems to have a good time with us.
This podcast was kind of a DIY project with yourself and you said some of your friends.
Oh yeah.
What did you learn about podcasting?
You know, we learned that it is a entire world. You know, we find out we're 5 years in and we're still learning stuff. And that's good because, you know, we don't claim to know everything. But we found, you know, through, and there's a lot of different vehicles for podcasts, obviously, whether it's audio, video, whatever the case may be. We started with SoundCloud and attached everything from there. And then, you know, you can find us a lot of different ways. And now if you hit the Google button or the whatever your search engine is and you hit in Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast, it's 10 or 20 different places that we don't even know because we're getting shared on other vehicles as well, which is great. Even all the way over to the land of the rising sun in Japan there, which is awesome. But we're finding out that this world it's a huge world and there's a whole lot of advertising. There's a whole lot of money and we've kind of stayed away from that so far. It's coming. I'm sure it's coming, but it's just for fun. But man, I tell you what, to find a niche in this podcast world is very challenging because pretty much anybody can do what we did 5 years ago. And that's just record something and throw it up on the internet somewhere. But it's just a matter of connecting to an audience and sharing that audience. And that's why I'm happy to talk with you as well, because, you know, I can share your stuff. You can share mine ever since you and I talked, on another podcast, actually, and, you know, PVD cast, I followed it, I shared it. And now hopefully I'm being able to, send some listeners and followers your way because it's always entertaining stuff.
Yeah. You know, and I think the thing for me, cause I also DIY had no idea what I was doing when I first started is I think the thing I look back on and go, you know what? There's a little bit more work to this than I thought there would be.
Yeah. it's work. Yeah. It's more than just pushing a button and throwing it up in the internet. There's time involved. And that's why I got to thank, you know, Big Ugly, my partner, Eric Murphy as well. He's sort of the production side of it. He's the technical side of it. I'm the entertainment. I'm the entertainment side. I'm the fact checker. I'm doing the research and the information. I'm getting the guests. I'm putting together the stories and the segments and everything. And to sort of, he's producing it technically. I'm producing it on the entertainment side. So it's good that we share that. Cause we both do a lot of work, but it comes off. We still have a lot of fun doing it.
Have you had a episode that you're really super proud of, or you're really super stoked about, or it's your favorite? Have you had one yet?
A couple.
Okay.
There was one several years back where we had all of the members of a group called Supremacy. This is an independent professional wrestling group, based out of Maryland. And it was sort of an anti-hero kind of group, NWO kind of thing, where it was just a whole lot of misfits and they all kind of came together, but they all came together and they ruled the world of independent professional wrestling for a year or two, and then they exploded. And then we had them all on at one time, and trying to facilitate that before the pandemic was interesting, because we had a cell phone here, we had another cell phone there, we had Facebook video going here, we had people live with us, and just having to manage that chaos. But we did it, and everybody got their points across, everybody was clear. And everybody had such a different view on not only their characters and their storylines, but also the world of professional wrestling, that it just spread out so far. And still to this day is getting listens. And people might not even know who Supremacy were or what the storyline was. After you listen to the episode, you will. But just listening to all of that back and forth, and it makes you want to believe in something, as far as, the world of professional wrestling. It's like, doesn't matter where it's at. If you believe that, it's going to be a thing. And we're really proud of that. And another one was a part of that Supremacy episode, but, Deacon Storm, Behind the Storm, Desert, he has a character called Desert Storm, Deacon Storm, Brian S. Gamble, Behind the Storm. That was basically just opening the curtain up and showing, after the storylines were over, after people had gone on to do different things, pulling back that curtain and showing what's behind the guardrail, what's behind the curtain of professional wrestling. And that one lasted 3 hours. We didn't intend it to, but it did. And it was just it was basically a shoot, just talking about behind the scenes. And he was a producer. He was a booker. He was creative. He was a wrestler himself. And that, just really proud that we can put things like that out there. Go back and forth and have different types of content. So we're really proud of that. But, we appreciate all of the guests, and we're almost at 100 episodes after 5 years, which is crazy. We appreciate all of them, but those two I'm particularly proud of.
Well, let's transition a little bit here and talk about your role in the world of indie professional wrestling. How did you get started in this wacky business of pro wrestling?
I'm a fan. That's how, way back in 1988, when my uncle and my aunt, started me watching WTBS at 6:05 on Saturday nights, watching, NWA pro wrestling. And then they showed me WWE, which was a completely different world. One was more characters and superheroes, and the other one was more wrestling in the ring. And once I got locked on that, man, when I was a kid, I always thought about what can I do one day? How can I do it? And then as I became a teenager in my late teens, early 20s, the world of backyard wrestling, it's somewhere we all get into it somehow. I ended up being a performer, but I also ended up being a booker and a creator, and I loved that side of it. And also became a carnival barker for it. I became promoting it on the outside, and also finding out that I have a voice, and I always loved to be a performer in some kind. I was always a ham. I was always in the school chorus. I was in, theater and things like that for a while. One day after all that, I decided to do it for real back in the early 2000s. And I went and enrolled in a professional wrestling school, got all the, took all the bumps and learned all the ropes, literally. And, I wasn't sure what I was going to be yet. I was just kind of learning to learn. And then I ended up being on ring crews and having the security. When you go out to a professional wrestling event and you see the guys wearing the yellow jackets, the security and things like that, you're behind the other side of the guardrail and you're technically part of the show, but you're also setting up the ring, breaking down the ring, paying your dues. Did all that. And at that point in time in my life, I was still kind of trying to figure out who I was, and I was doing more acting and other things like that. So kind of got away from it, and still was a fan, but kind of got away from the business for a while. And then about 10 years ago or so, I decided to do it again. I went back to a wrestling school locally and I said, hey, I've done this before, but I want to start from scratch. I want to start from zero. I had an idea this time. I was going to be a referee. I was like, I know physically I can't hang with these people. I think that's what I was trying to do before. I was going to be a wrestler, but I just knew physically I could not hang to be a wrestler. I'd respect all those guys, anybody who ever laces up the boots. But a referee, I'm like, you know, that's something I could do. I could stay in the background. I could be an authoritative figure. I know the business. I understand the business, and I'm a fan. So as long as I could keep my fan side out of it, I can be a referee. But then I started refereeing. I started refereeing a lot. I started loving it, enjoying it, being really good at it from other people's perspectives, which was great. And then I let people know, like, you know, I'm an actor. I can talk, you know, and obviously when I'm in there in the ring refereeing, I'm being very authoritative. And somebody, you know, at one point there was a ring announcer that was not there. And somebody said, yeah, give him a shot. What are we going to lose? You know, let's have him be a ring announcer. And from there on, I kind of did double duty. You know, some organizations I was ring announcer, some I was ref, some I was both in independence. Sometimes that's what you do. And I love that part of it too, putting on the suit and doing the carnival barking. Again, I understand sort of what's going on in the business. I know how to get other people over, not myself. It's not about me. And somehow I got myself over just by doing the job that they wanted me to do. And then it all turned into just a world of companies and acquaintances and colleagues. And, you know, now with this pandemic being over, I'm getting, you know, calls of my blowing up. It's like, hey, you know, what you doing? You know, you want to do a commentary, you want to do a refereeing, you want to do this one. And I'll certainly get back and do it when I can, how I can, however I can help out. So that's it. It starts off by being a fan. I think independent wrestling, it's not about making a living necessarily, because it's all about a hot dog and a handshake, and there's some money involved somewhere. But honestly, you got to be a fan. And most of the people that I've met in so many companies that I've worked for, they're fans. And there's a brotherhood and a sisterhood and a camaraderie. So I love that part of it, man.
The one thing I think is the biggest misconception that a lot of fans have is that referees and ring announcers, they're not important, you know? And I feel like as coming from somebody who's been a ring announcer for my entire career and now been doing some play-by-play,
yeah,
I think that's a total misconception that, you know, you could just take the promoter's pal and give him a mic and let him do his thing. No, I think you got to have an understanding of how it works. Especially refereeing, because you got to have the right ring positioning. You got to know where to be and when to be there. And I assume you share that same opinion.
Yeah, I do. It's a very, very undersung. And I think they're not supposed to, again, they're not supposed to take the glory, you know, ring announcers, referees, mm-hmm. people like that, managers, valets, whatever the case may be. They're just as an essential part, if not the most essential. If you do not have a ring announcer driving, you know, before the matches, after the matches, in between, during the downtime, keeping time, you know, keep making sure and helping referees, signaling, all kinds of different things. If you don't have a good ring announcer, somebody who's not involved or somebody who does not know what's going on or doesn't care what's going on, that it's just going to take your whole show down because the ring announcer's in the whole show. Most wrestlers that you see come out for 5 or 10 minutes, they do their thing, they go in the back. That's it. But they're the ones that your people are there to see. And that's what you got to get over. And it's very challenging to do that sometimes. But I never wanted the glory, but it's very undersung. And referees are supposed to be invisible. You're wearing black and white, whatever the case may be. You know, you're there to be an authoritative figure, but you're also there to help guide the action in the ring, whatever's happening in the ring, and keep the focus away from the referee. Sometimes the referee takes a bump or gets involved in a spot, whatever the case may be. But if you don't have a solid referee, that whole match, those two people or four people or however many people in the matches you came out to see, it's gonna look terrible, and the people are not gonna enjoy it. And that's what you're there. You know, you're there to entertain people, but you're also not gonna be fulfilled. It's like, man, we had a crappy ref and we couldn't do the job that we wanted to do. So, and they're also referees are also take a lot of the blame sometimes, you know, if something didn't go right in the ring, you know, you'll hear it from the guys and sometimes it's a ribs, you know, but a lot of times it's, you know, somebody like, man, I could have had a better match, man, that ref, you know, blew that spot for me. Like, you know, you got to have an ego sometimes in a world of professional wrestling. It's hard. And I'm glad that I got to learn how to do it. And I'm still learning to this day. It's hard. I mean, and this is what casual fans probably don't understand. Refereeing, I mean, one wrestler has one job, one wrestler has another job, and their job is to sell for the other guy, not to get the other guy hurt, and to tell a story. But that referee's got to tell that story with you. That referee's got to be on page with both stories that are trying to be told, or in a tag match, all four stories that are trying to be told, or whatever the case may be. I definitely screwed up a lot, especially in the beginning, but that's how you learn. And I learned to do very well. And luckily, a lot of guys and girls came back to me, you know, shake my hand. Thank you for refereeing the match. Thank you for helping us tell our story. It's great. And I've been involved in a couple of storylines as a referee, as a ring announcer, and even as a worker. And I've been privileged to do that. But I think that's because when I did the job of ring announcer and referee, I did it well enough to earn the respect of others. So yeah, casual fans should definitely, it's because you don't see it on television. Mm-hmm. When you watch, you know, the camera's not on the referee necessarily, you know, giving that blowing up that spot. It's on the wrestlers. So that's what it is. And you understand too. But when you're the ring announcer, the focus is on you, but you're putting the focus on, hey, what's coming up here tonight? And hey, you can log on to this to follow us. And hey, you can, you know, this is what's coming up next time. There's so much you got to get across. But yeah, definitely, I appreciate your ring announcers and referees, people, and your managers and your valets just as much, if not more, than your wrestlers. But they're making your wrestlers look good.
Let's be honest; it takes a whole village, and I know it's very cliche, but it takes a whole village to run a wrestling show. You need a great DJ. You need people who are willing to help with tickets and seating and everything. And it's oftentimes those people are overlooked, and they shouldn't be, but they are because. Yeah.
Their name's not on the marquee, you know?
Right, exactly. Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth, Mike, on that one. So let's go back to your start on WTBS, watching NWA and WWF. Who were some of your favorites back in the day?
I got to tell you, I was a Hulkamaniac, you know, as far as the WWE side. And I love the Ultimate Warrior. But when my aunt and uncle started me on the WTBS side, I just kind of – first thing that actually really stood out to me was the commentating. It was Jim Ross mostly before he jumped over the WWE. He had always, you know, and this is before he got Bell's palsy. This is when he was on his game, like 100%, you know, he would be telling a story and he would tell the story of the match. And as the match would go longer and the heat would get hotter and the crowd would get hotter, Jim Ross's voice would go up and start screaming. And he'd be so excited, be like, man, he's so excited to watch this and tell me about it. I've got to be invested in this. So that's the first thing I kind of understood. But then I started watching people like Ric Flair, especially Ric Flair, anything with him, Sting, you know, on the WTBS side, loved that stuff, man. And they started introducing the tag teams. They started into, and I also paid special attention to the ring announcer, honestly, Gary Michael Capetta at that point in time, where he also told a wonderful story with everything that he was trying to get across by telling you where these people came from, how much they weighed. I never really understood until, you know, years later how that resonated with me, but I loved that stuff. There wasn't a whole lot of production value on the NWA WCW side, not yet. You know, a couple of lights flashing here and there, you know, but mostly it was the ring. And being from Baltimore, a lot of stuff happened in the Baltimore arena right downtown. Great American Bashes, and even every Friday night, the NWA was there, man. And they would have 10,000 people in the building every time. And this was when I was a kid, and I didn't understand it very well, but man, it was hot. Loved all that stuff.
Who do you think is on the Mount Rushmore of ring announcing, since you mentioned Gary Michael Capetta?
Oh, man, he's up there. If I got to do four, you know, the Fink. You know, I got to put the Fink up there.
Got to.
You know, and I gotta put it in here. As far as ring announcing goes, it's tough because sometimes, you know, people like he escapes me now, but he was WWE. Now he's in AEW. Why am I blanking on his
name? Justin Roberts.
Thank you. He did a lot for a long time, and I think he's kind of going into the background now too. But his voice is just so recognizable at this point. That's why I don't know the name. I know the voice. Like I could mimic his voice almost, you know. So I got to think I could put him up there as well. At this point, I think he's earned his stripes. And you know, ring announcers or announcers in general, Joey Styles from ECW, he ran a one-man booth. He could be a commentator, he could be a ring announcer, whatever you needed him to do. He better go into any Hall of Fame that they got anytime, any day, because I mean, he helped take an entire brand of wrestling and push it to a television audience and to a VHS tape audience. So as far as announcers, you know, Joey Styles is right up there.
I agree. Fink, Capetta. I say Michael Buffer would be on my list.
I got outside. He was in pro wrestling for a little bit for WCW. Sure. He did that. So, yeah, I mean, as far as general ring announcers of the whole entire planet, yeah, he's got to be up there.
And my fourth one is Ring of Honor's Bobby Cruz. I think he does. He's got that voice. They all four of those gentlemen had a specific voice. That's why I would put them on my Mount Rushmore ring announcer.
Yeah. Bobby Cruz. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Ring of Honor too. I have been for a while. No, it's gone through peaks and valleys, but they always put on a quality product, and they always give the fans in attendance, as well as if they're trying to portray on television or iPay-per-view or whatever, something to do. And as far as announcers, maybe not ring announcers, but announcers in general, Mean Gene. Mean Gene just had such a staple on, not only he could do anything. Again, he could ring announce, he could interview, he could commentate. He could entertain. So, and you know, sorry to see him go not too long ago, but yeah, love that Mount Rushmore question. It's always fun.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Mike for just one moment to remind you about a great sponsor of the PVDcast, World's Greatest Comics. They're the comic book shop that's got everything you need for your fandom, whether you're talking about single issues, graphic novels, collections, back issues, toys, collectibles, posters, they got it all. So stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But if you're not in the Central Ohio area, you could check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. Just search for @WGComics. And please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, on the PVDcast. Well, let's talk about something you've touched on here, that you are a singer and an actor as well. So how did you get started with those industries, I guess you could say?
As far as acting goes, I was always a ham, and, you know, any kind of schooling that I've ever had, you know, grade school wanted to put me in the chorus, and, so I did it, and, churches wanted to put me in the choirs, and I did that. And then when I got into high school, for extra credit for English class, my English teacher was also a director of of high school theater, and she said, yeah, you should come down, you'll get extra credit. And you know, they realized I had some sort of either personality, or I would do almost anything that they told me, whether it be for the credit or not. So they said, here, put on these, you know, pink MC Hammer pants and take this torch, and you're going to jump out on stage, and it's going to be awesome. And when you actually do it during the performances, that torch is going to actually be lit on fire. I'm like, all right, I'll do it, you know, whatever. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up being, you know, featured roles and little feature roles here and there, and in the chorus. But I was there was like, man, you got the strongest voice in the chorus, you got the strongest personality, we're always putting you in the front line, why don't you go out for some kind of a lead role or something? I'm like, that means I got to sing by myself in front of people, and I don't know if I want to do that. But when I found the courage to take the first step, and this is the same thing in pro wrestling, I just got a taste for it, and I loved it, and I was addicted to it. And then I just realized that, like you said, it takes a village. So no matter what role I was playing, I enjoyed every single piece of it. So I guess high school, got into acting, started doing theater for, you know, 20, 25 years, which ultimately led to me doing pro wrestling as well. And then singing, I've been involved in church choirs for a while. I've also been involved in barbershop singing, which is kind of a lesser known thing. But, for the 4-part harmonies that come with quartets and also big groups of people singing all kinds of different stuff, barbershop singing is a wonderful hobby. It's a wonderful, you know, talent that a lot of these guys have. And I'm a couple of years into that, maybe 3 or 4 years into that. My dad does it too. He's been doing it for about 20 years, and I actually get to sing with him as well. So we get to go and we sing patriotic songs. We get to put on shows. We get to go out to different places and sing, of course, all pre-pandemic, and we're going to start getting back into it now. But the camaraderie of the guys, and they do have, barbershop women's choruses as well. So they, you know, it's not limited to just guys, but man, I tell you, the when you put all these voices together and the 4-part harmonies and 50, 60 people, it's just a wave of beautiful sound. And I love that kind of stuff. So I'm still trying to do what I can when I can. But I love performing, man.
You just mentioned the word camaraderie with barbershop singing, which is, again, a word you hear all the time with professional wrestling.
Yeah, and that's when you get that flow of beautiful sound, or you get that flow of a beautiful wrestling show, you know, sometimes there's imperfections, sometimes things can go wrong. But when you have a camaraderie of people, when you have that village coming together, it's a beautiful thing. It's a teamwork kind of thing. And it's just a wonderful thing, whether you're doing theater, whether you're doing barbershop singing, professional wrestling, whatever the case may be. And that can translate into, you know, whatever else you're doing in life too. If things are working with family, friends, colleagues at work, podcasting, when it all kind of flowing together and all that work pays off, man, it's just a great feeling to keep, you know, living life like that.
Do you have any upcoming acting gigs or any upcoming performances, whether singing or acting, that you'd like to talk about real quick? Or
you know, just real quick, if you follow the Chorus of the Chesapeake on Facebook, basically it's been a very, very recognized group for several years, national champions twice, always in the top 20, always in the top five, everywhere you go in the districts or the regions. But we're getting back into it. The Heritage Fair in Dundalk. It's it's a local thing, you know what? But it happens every year. It's happened except last year. But we'll be singing at the opening ceremony, singing some patriotic songs on Friday, July the 2nd at 7 p.m. It's actually on my Facebook page, Michael Dels, D-E-L-S-S, and you'll look and you'll see the Heritage Fair flyer, and you'll see it's three straight days of, 2nd of July, 3rd of July, 4th of July. It's great stuff. A lot of local entertainment, great food, beer gardens, you know, it's good stuff. It's very inexpensive to enter, you know, $10 to get you in all day. It's fantastic. And 7 p.m. Friday, July 2nd, then we'll be going up to perform at Lancaster, Pennsylvania in October for a district contest, which is more of just a gathering. You know, there's nothing to compete for this year. It's just about all getting together and singing safely. And it's also, leading up to November at Essex Community College or CCBC Essex, there's going to be a big show that we're going to do. And we're going to try to put a lot of greatest hits and things like that together. So keep up on that. You know, Chorus of the Chesapeake is awesome, but support local things like that, local theaters that are coming up and trying to do shows, support comedy, comedians, Magoobies, Joke House, and Timonium. Support these people that are coming out and trying to entertain you safely.
Let's talk about some sports, because I saw on your Facebook page that you recently was at a Nationals game. You're an Orioles guy.
I am.
How heated is that rivalry? Is it a big rivalry?
The Beltway Series between the Nationals and the Orioles is... because of the closeness that's there, it's always a big fight. It's always feels like a big personal fight. And both teams are not, doing the greatest at this point in time. So, to be inside of that, to fight for every inch and to see what you can do. I mean, in the game that I went to specifically, the Orioles hit a grand slam in the first inning. We were up 5-0. And by the time I knew it, the Nationals had hit a grand slam as well and came back, and they won that game 12-9. So that was just, it was an offensive slaughter or a pitching disaster, one of the two. But it always seems, and the fans, it's great. You know, it was Nationals Park. I was wearing Caps gear. I was wearing my red, white, and blue Capitals gear because the Capitals were still in the hockey playoffs at that point in time. So I wasn't betraying the Orioles, but I also looked like I fit in. But there were so many Orioles fans there. That was my first Orioles game at Nationals Park. And there were probably about half and half, you know, Orioles and Nationals. And I can't wait to see the Nationals play in Oriole Park, because we're probably going to get the same thing. And the teams are probably going to be sucking up the bottom of the division still at that point in time in July. So just for them, I love that personal stuff. When you can create a personal feud out of it just by the closeness of it, I love that stuff, man. And as far as the Caps go, like when I go to watch a Caps game and I see them playing the Penguins or the Islanders or somebody that's close and that's a, you know, personal rivalry, I love it. You know, especially in wrestling, you love to see rivalries because they're personal, man, and they're so much more fun to watch.
Who's your favorite Oriole of all time?
Cal Ripken. Standard answer. I grew up with him. I could always count on him, and he created a minor league ballpark so we could go watch games even closer and even cheaper. He created a whole minor league system, and he's still doing it, and the whole family. He's a Hall of Famer. So yeah, Cal Ripken is my favorite Oriole of all time.
What is the scuttlebutt in the area after the Capitals lost in the Stanley Cup playoffs to Boston? Has there been Has there been any rumor and innuendo flying around about changes to the organization?
You know, it's funny. They made so many changes after 2018 when they actually won the Stanley Cup, including getting rid of their head coach. Nothing's going to surprise me at this point. You know, they have some free agents. But the thing is, you know, the Caps did play well during this entire full season of hockey. They did a good job. But when they got to that series with Boston, Boston just had the upper hand every single time. They were a better overall team at that point in time than the Caps were. I got to give it to them. You know, the only game the Caps won, it went into overtime, and they barely won that one. And then the other four, a couple of them went into overtime, and then, you know, Boston just crushed them. So I think some changes could be good, but I do see, you know, we do need leadership. And we do need to keep some of those franchise players on and help that leadership come out. I think the Caps, just like the past, you know, 5-10 years, they've always been a competing team, a strong team, and just missing the brass ring pretty much every year except 2018. But if they can stay strong, I think there's a lot of players that can stick around, and we can pick up some new players to help out too.
So, haven't asked NFL affiliation.
Baltimore, so I'm a Ravens guy. Yeah.
Okay. Ravens guy. Okay.
I was, you know, my dad was in Baltimore Colts guy. He was in the Baltimore Colts marching band, which is pretty awesome.
Really?
Yeah. He was a part of that band for a while, and I actually got to enjoy some of that behind the scenes. It was cool that he did that. And, you know, just all of a sudden. So, you know, Baltimore had the Colts, and then Baltimore had no team, and then Baltimore had a Canadian football team for a while, and, you know, trying to get it in there. And then once the Ravens got there, Baltimore is a, you know, a strange city, and Maryland's a big state. Baltimore's a strange city, but we are a sports city. I will say that. Mm-hmm. All the way from that NWA wrestling back in the 80s, the Baltimore Orioles, you know, since the 50s, the Baltimore Colts for a while, and then the Baltimore Ravens. We are a strong sports city, and the Ravens always fight. And, you know, no matter what the Ravens seem to be doing, there's two Super Bowl championships. They're in the playoffs almost every other year. We always seem to have some sort of exciting games when it comes out to watching them live or on television. So I got to be a Ravens guy.
Well, as we're getting up to our time limit here, and it's gone so fast, to be bluntly honest with you, Michael.
I just looked at the clock for the first time when you said that, man. This has been great conversation.
Like, holy cow.
We'll do it again anytime.
You got it. Let's plug some stuff. Let's plug where folks can find the Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast. Plug some upcoming episodes, social media for that, website, anything that you have. Go ahead and plug away, my friend.
I appreciate you, brother. So, yeah, the Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast. You can certainly find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. We have a Facebook page. We have an Instagram, DUW Podcast. That's also my personal Instagram. We're on Twitter, DUW Podcast, DUW Wrestling. And we also have dirtyuglywrestling@gmail.com. If you ever want to email us ideas, guests, you know, thoughts, whatever the case may be. But follow us, like us, subscribe us, you know, hit up the Facebook page. And also, if you Google Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast, it's only us that comes up. We were the only people that seemed to put those words together in one faction, which is great because it always leads you somewhere where you can find us. There's 10 or 20 other different places. And if you want to follow me, I got everything, you know, Michael Dels on Facebook, D-E-L-S-S. You can also find me the same way on Instagram and Twitter. But the Facebook, you know, follow me, like me, subscribe to me, and, you know, comment. We love the comments. We love people liking, following, commenting, because it always ends up in our episodes. So we appreciate all the likes, subscribes, follows, and listens and shares. And Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast coming up in the summer. We're going to be promoting some independent professional wrestling around Baltimore and Maryland. We're going to be getting back into some previous guests as well, leading up to our big 100th episode. It's going to be awesome. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. It's going to be a party, man. And if we've learned anything over the past year in the pandemic, the easiest way to do that's probably going to be the biggest Zoom call in history. So that everybody everywhere can just log onto their phone, hit that link, and say, boom, there we are, baby. And every former guest that we've ever had on the Dirty Ugly Wrestling Podcast is going to be invited into that call. And we're going to monitor it. We're going to have a waiting room. We're going to make sure we don't get fished or bombed. You know, so we're learning, but it's going to be great to just pull as many people as we can back together. And, you know, hey, man, the PVD cast, you know, you're going to check that out everywhere that, you know, we're going to check you out too. And I'm going to keep sharing that on my personal and the Dirty Ugly Wrestling Facebook page as well.
Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it. Do you have any wrestling bookings coming up anytime soon, real quick?
Hopefully, you know, as I said, there's a couple of different organizations that I was working with, you know, before the pandemic, and hopefully, you know, Susquehanna Wrestling Organization in Seven Valleys, Pennsylvania, they just had their first show in over a year and a half. So definitely I've worked with them, go out and support them. Eastern Wrestling Association, EWA Pro Wrestling, you know, I've worked with them over a whole lot of years, and, you know, hopefully I'll be working with them again. And I was doing some things on and off with MCW Pro Wrestling, and they are just starting to get their wheels going too. So anything you can do for those three promotions. But I've always been a guy, support indie wrestling. You follow one thing on Facebook, you're going to get blasted with a whole lot of things that are going to come up and say, would you like to like this? Would you like to follow this? You know, it's always good to go out and support a professional wrestling show, especially indie wrestling, because you're going to see people that genuinely love the business and love what they're doing. And the organizations that are putting on the shows are definitely taking care of people. So support those three and just support indie wrestling, man.
I could not agree anymore with that statement. Support indie wrestling. Doesn't matter if you're in Oregon, Ohio, Maryland, Baltimore, New York City, Los Angeles. Doesn't matter. Support indie wrestling.
Yes, sir.
Mike, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, man.
I appreciate you, man. Anytime you want to run this back, let's do it again. You know, you're giving me the go home cue, but I appreciate you and support the PVD cast as well. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, man. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mike Dells, talking about his career in independent professional wrestling in Maryland, as well as the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast, his singing, his acting, all the stuff that he's got going on. And please follow Mike on social media. And of course, follow and listen to the Dirty Ugly Wrestling podcast as well. I know that Mike would really appreciate the support. Well, I think now is the time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have a question or comment or whatnot. You can shoot me an email if you're old school. That email address, by the way, is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can leave me a message over on the Instagram and Facebook feeds. Just look for @pvdcast. And I'm even on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. And please let folks know where they can hear the PVD cast. And probably the easiest place to go is pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms. All you got to do is place PVDcast, sometimes my name, PVDcast John Orlando, into your favorite platform search bar, and you should be able to find this podcast. Maybe you don't want to jump through all those hoops to hear the PVDcast. Well, there's one other way you can catch every single weekly episode, and that's through the Facebook broadcast that I do every single Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time through the Facebook page of the PVD cast. Again, just search for @PVDcast and you can hear the weekly episode. And it's even simulcast through my friends at Three Geeks Podcast and The Scene Snob. So just go over to threegeeks.ninja or thescenesnobs.com and you can listen to the PVD cast on Monday nights at 8. And while you're there, check out the great content that both Three Geeks and all of the folks over the Scene Snobs Network are putting out. There's tons of great podcasting goodness going on in both of those places. All right, with that being said then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. So I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. following has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2021.